me your name, your address and date of birth, please.
Margaret Duggan. And my date of birth, 10th to the 5th, 47.
Great. So tell me a little bit about your background, your mother, your father, what they did for a living, any siblings and what they did for a living.
My father worked in a creamery. He worked in the back stand, giving out the milk. And my mother was a housewife.
I'm sorry, where were you born?
I was born in Ireland, in Arda, County Limerick. And I've got one brother and two sisters. And my brother was a carpenter, joiner. My sister is a civil servant. She works for the assessment office, I suppose, in Newcastle. And my other sister was a nurse, but now she's a housewife. She's retired. And me, I couldn't wait to leave school. I did my primary education in Arda, and then after that I did 2 years domestic economy course in the Tech Newcastle West, where I had to cycle every day to school, 3.5 miles at home in the evening. And from school, my first job was a cook in a private house, which I really liked, but I had to work 6.5 days a week. And I'd go home every evening, which was 3.5 miles cycling home. And when I went in there in the morning, I started work at 8:15. And I'd prepare their breakfast. The job was fine. It was just that it was a bit lonely because I was on my own, because they had a business, and the Mr. Dash, he went down to the Mineral Waters, got on with his job, and his wife used to go golfing a lot. So I was my own boss there, really, so long as I did everything that was supposed to be done. And I finished that, and then I went working in a shop, which I hated.
Before we go there, can I just ask, how old are you when you left school?
I was 17.
All right, so you'd done some exams then?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I did what would be the primary and the group cert in Newcastle at the Tech. That was at the end of the 2 year course, which I passed, thank God. But then...
What was the reason you were so determined to leave then?
Leave school?
Yeah.
It was always my vision to leave school and go work and have my own money, really. Because I was the oldest of 4 children. And we never went short. My father never drank, never smoked, neither did my mother. All the money went into the home. But it wasn't as if they would be able to give you money every week. I wanted my own money to be able to do my own things. There was 3 children younger than me. And that was just my aim in life, to get out of work and to be able to do my own thing and have my own money, really. Which I don't think was bad. Today they'd be getting it off the state.
Did you have to contribute to your mother?
Oh, I gave my mother, initially, it might be 5 shillings a week. I always gave something. And as time went by and my money went up, I would give her more. We'd agree that the amount. I mean, I didn't live at home for nothing. Everybody did. It was how it was. And as I said, I went after working and doing the cooking, which I did enjoy. The only thing that put me off was 6.5 days a week. When you were a cook, that's how it was. But I was too young, I think, to be tied down like that for so long. But I also, as I said, worked in a shop. I did not like that at all. And then we had the Industrial Revolution in Ireland, and the Yangs came to Ireland and opened factories out of Shannon Airport. So
what year was, you know, what time?
It was being 1965. I think I went work in 1963. Oh, I'll have to show you my certificate I got when I... Let me show you that.
Okay, we'll go back to the... So you said the factory started opening up in Ireland.
Yeah, in Ireland. In our part, anyway. It's a bit of another place, but the Yangs came and opened... There was an industrial estate built out of Shannon Airport. And there was jobs, loads of jobs there. Money was much better, of course. And conditions were, because you had only worked 5 days a week. I went to the first place I wanted to go to, where all the people from around my area were. They were already got enough people. Because I didn't apply in the beginning, because I've been working in the shop until I was worked. The shop that I worked in had a bar in it, as well as being a grocery shop. And I was only 17. And I was serving behind the bar as well, you see. And the superintendent of the guards at home, which would be equivalent to the police here, came in and seen me behind the bar and told the owner that I shouldn't be behind the bar. I was underage. And of course, being small, maybe he wouldn't have known, but because I was short, he did. So she had to find somebody else. So that's when I went, but I didn't like the job anyway, so I was glad. That's when I went to Shannon. And then I got a job in a different factory. But my aim was to get into EI, where most of the people from our area were. And I did eventually get
in
there.
So what was EI?
It was General Electric, but they called it, the code name was Emerald Isle.
Uh-huh.
That's why they called it EI. As far as I know, that's what I was told. And I stayed there from, I suppose, 66. Until 1970. In between, we had a redundancy. Because I was last in, we were the first out. And I had a friend whose boyfriend had a very bad accident, and he was paralysed from the waist down. And he was in a hospital in Dunleary in County Dublin. And Joan said to me, would you come to Dublin with me to work when I was made redundant? Because I had to sign on the dole when I was made redundant from work, and I had to go in and sign. I think it was 3 days a week. I had to go in Monday, Wednesday and Friday to sign to say I was still out of work. And Joan used to come with me. She was made redundant as well. We were just after together. And she asked me if I'd go to Dublin with her, and I said, well, if we can get a job, I will. We were going to see if we could get a job in the hospital where my maid was. And we did. So I went up to Dublin with Joan. Never been to Dublin in my life. Well, I had as a child on a school excursion. We only went as domestic staff. But the two of us were made waitresses over the dining rooms for the nurses, which caused a bit of friction by the people that were there before us. Because they had him there because they didn't have anybody else or something. But we enjoyed that. But then I got a call back to EI, and that was the end of me and Dunleary with that home. To go back to EI, and I stayed there until the end of March 1970. I loved it. It was great to work there. The only thing is we had to get up very early every morning because we lived 50 miles from Shannon. And there was a bus that came from 10 miles outside my village and picked us up about, I think it was 20 to 6 in the morning. Now, it must have been because we had 50 miles to go to Shannon and we had to go through Limerick City going there. But on the way, we picked up people all along the way that were working in Shannon. And then we'd finish work at 5 o'clock in the evening, but we wouldn't get home till about 6:45 because there'd be a big traffic jams coming in. But we used to sleep on the bus and do different things. And occasionally we would be singing our heart's delight coming home and the bus are going in the morning, depending if we'd been out the night before or not. But there was no drinking. We never drank in those days. The worst thing you could do was smoke, but I didn't smoke. My friends did. And that was the end of Shannon. Then I had met my, I don't know what to tell you this or not, my ex-husband. And he was working here in Wales. He was Irish. And my best friend who worked in Shannon with me at EI was going out with his brother. And they came over here to Wales. And that's what brought us over.
I see. So what were they doing?
Oh, they were labourers. My ex-husband used to drive a JCB. And I think Mikey did something similar for building firms here. You know, Irish builders. They'd be subcontractors and that. And that's what brought me to Wales.
So you came to Wales you without a job then?
I was without a job when I came to Wales.
So what happened then?
I came, we had friends over here then. My ex-husband's family were here. And we moved in with his sister and her husband and their children for a short period of time. And we went looking. Bridget's husband was from Northern Ireland. And now Bridget is who we stayed when we came over here, my ex-husband's sister.
I see. Right. Oh, that's quite good, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So tell me then, you went for this interview and you started work. What did you do? Did you have any training, and what did you do when you started?
Yes. When I started, I was put on a machine to make cigars. And there was two sections, sort of. A machine, there was two people on a machine in those days. And there was one who started to make what we call the bunch, was the process was that you'd put leaf on a die. The die would then take that leaf over to a drums, and there was from those down coming down from a hopper on the machine was filler that went into this leaf that the buncher had actually put on the die. It's hard to explain, but I'm doing my best. Then that would come around, and the roller, there was a buncher and a roller on the machine. I was put on to be a roller. So the buncher could put on leaf that didn't have holes in it, but a roller had to put perfect leaf on, and they'd divide the holes, and that would be the outside of the cigar.
Right.
Then
so you were trained to do this?
I was trained. Well, I started having training. But I cut my hand in the machine the first couple of days. and there's the mark at the top of the die. So I was off for 2 weeks because I had 8 stitches there. Never been on the sick in my life from work. I came over here. And
did they pay you when you
were? Oh, yeah, they did.
All right.
They did. I was taken to St. David's Hospital. Frightened the life out of me. I was laid out on a table, my hand out, nothing. But my whole hand was swollen because it was all coming in. Now, I believe it was the bunch's fault because when you had a trainee on with you, they used to get impatient, but I didn't know what happened.
Uh-huh.
And they'd tap the pedal like this. Well, if they're tapping the pedal like that and you haven't got your foot proper on the pedal, it'll bring up your foot off it.
Uh-huh.
Or if it isn't like strong on it. Well, I didn't know. Anyway, I got caught in the machine. So I was off. So when I went back...
Could I just ask, did they give you compensation for that?
Eventually I got it.
All right, yeah. Right, okay.
The union, when I came back, the union came. I didn't know anything about compensation or anything like that. And they said that there'd be a claim put in for me. I think going back, I had, mind you, it took ages for it to come through, Catherine. £180 or something like that I had. But back in 1970, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
But then when I came back, I couldn't go back on a machine because my hand was still, was having physio on it. So they put me doing another job. How was I glad I cut my hand on the machine, because I loved the job they put me on. What I was doing, the cigars would be packed into tins of 500 by the roller. The buncher would do one job, the roller would be here finishing off the cigar, and there was a, she had a tin where she put her, the cigars in, and they went into a tin, 500 in a tin. So my job then was to collect the tins and record them on their a card, their production card. And then I would take the tins, they had numbers on them, the number corresponding with the machine. If it didn't, you had to put a card on it to make sure that you were the right one. And then I weighed them. I was called what they called a check weigher. And the cigars, every morning you would be given a weight to have the cigars at, and the tins 500. And if the tin was, you were allowed sort of 10 either side of that. And if a tin was overweight or underweight, you went and you adjusted, you'd weigh 50 to check what they were. And then you adjusted the machine accordingly. And when you recorded the weight of the tin, that was corresponding with the number on their card. Do you know what I mean? If I collected 5 tins from them, I would have the time I collected it on their record card, the production card, and then I would be writing it on my sheet with the weight on it. And then at the end of the day, I would go down round and do their productions, and I would write it on my sheet. You check first, see if the number of tins corresponded with what was on the card. And the supervisor would do the production on the card. I would do it on my own sheet. And when they'd have tins of 500, at the end of the day, they might say, do, say, 6,500. But it may be 6,300. So they... that 300 would be kept in a tin until the next day, and they continue filling that tin. But on the production cards then would be 300 start for the next morning. Because the girls on the machines would earn bonuses. Dependent, there was a bonus, what was it called? An utilisation. The leaf would be weighed in, first of all, four 4 ounces, I think it used to be weighed. And one of the leaf testing people would go out and do a check with the girls on a machine to see how many they could get out of 4 ounces of leaf.
Oh, I see.
And then they would get so many pounds of leaf. Because I didn't actually work on a machine, I can't tell you exactly, precisely how this worked. But they'd be then, there were target setters. That's what the ladies were called.
Yes.
And then there would be a target would go up on the board, because each bag of leaf, or bales of leaf, had a number to them. And they'd be target setters then would put the number up on the board for so-and-so, so-and-so batch of leaf. This is how many you should get out. Now, if they could get more out of that leaf, then they need to, they get a bonus for that. And then at the end of the day, there were so many, a production of so much you were supposed to get out. If you got more than that, you got bonus for that as well. But now I didn't, because I was on a set wage.
Yeah. Why did you like your job so much to begin with, before I ask you what the wage was?
I just loved it. Yeah. I think, I don't think I'd have liked it on a machine. I liked the freedom of being able to go around, talk to the girls, do my work. I always did my work properly. I just loved it. Mm. And then, I don't know why I liked it, I just did.
How much were you paid then? Do you remember?
Oh God, you're asking me now. I suppose we were on £12 a week.
£12 a week.
I was on more than what I was getting in Ireland, you know, quite a bit. But then we got...
I was just going to ask you, were you paid more because you were on a set wage, because you couldn't make it up?
Yes. But I still wouldn't have got as much money as a girl on a machine would have been able to earn. But that didn't bother me.
No.
Because I was enjoying the job I was doing. Whereas I may not have enjoyed it on a machine. And especially after catching my hand.
I was going to say, were you a bit nervous of machinery?
Yeah. But, I liked my job that I was doing. I suppose maybe I had a bit more freedom than the people on the machine. I didn't have the pressure that they had. Because some people on a machine, it just came so easy. Others, it wasn't so easy for them. So I think that's what I enjoyed, the freedom of not having too much pressure. I was well able to do what I was doing, and there was no pressure on me.
So take me through a day then, those early days. Where were you travelling from, and how did you get there? And, you know, what time did you have to, you told me that, but, you know, so we'll start with, where were you travelling from and how did you get there?
I was travelling from Riverside.
All right.
And there was a works bus from Victoria Park that picked us up on Ninian Park Road.
All right.
It stopped on the way. It started out at Victoria Park and all down along Canton it would pick up, there was pickup spots. Then it would turn off by Kitchener Road School, a Tesco sort of, that turn off there, they would come. And then from there, they'd go on to Ninian Park Road, and we'd be picked up there. And then all the ways down, we'd go down to Grangetown, and we'd turn into, by the Neville Pub, what's that, is that Court Road? Anyway, whatever it is. And eventually we'd pick up all the ways down along. There were certain spots where they'd be picked up at. And then we'd go down our Clive Street and down Penarth Road, and the bus would drop us there.
So did you have to pay for that bus?
Yes.
Or you did have
yes,
to pay?
Yes, yeah.
So it although it was a special bus, it wasn't a kind of
no, it wasn't
laid
a free
on
bus.
By the company?
No. Even the people from the valleys, there used to be 7 buses that came from the valleys back in the 70s, because, I mean, it was really good. Then lots of course, machinery took over, really, I suppose. They had to pay for their bus as well, but they got some subsidy, whereas we didn't in Cardiff. And some people in Cardiff were actually paying more than people in the valleys because they had to get 2 buses. They would have to get a bus from one place to get the works bus. So there must be a bone of contention about that, but it never worried me because I was just coming from Canton or whatever.
So, sorry, what time did you start then, did you say?
Start at 7:30.
7:30, and you clocked in then?
Yes,
did you?
Yes.
So what about your breaks and things then?
In the morning at, I believe it was 10 o'clock, we would have a first break of 10 minutes. And there was a canteen you could go down, you could have, you could have whatever. There was always something there. There was a works canteen. And in those early days, there was one canteen for the staff, which were the supervisors, the office staff and all that. And the other canteen, the big canteen, was for the on-the-floor people. And that was a 10-minute break. But you could have a cup of coffee, maybe something to eat. I was at 15 minutes. I think it was supposed to be 10, but we used to make it 15 sometimes. I'm not sure if a hooter used to go when it was the break. I'm not sure. I can't. In the morning, a hooter went when it was time to start. Mm. And then we would have a break again at, say, 12:30. That would be a half-hour break. And different... One week you might have the 10 o'clock break and the following week, because it used to have to divide it up between the different rooms because there was too many people to go down the canteen if the whole factory went down there. That wasn't so at the end, though. And I can't remember, we used to work until 4. I don't think we had a break in the afternoon, but I'm not sure, because eventually they brought in tea bars, and it meant if you wanted to go and have a drink, you could have a drink in the tea bars. There was machines there, put in your money, and you would have a drink. I think the canteen for the drinks used to be free in the mornings when I started there initially. You paid for your food, or you bring your own food. But when I started there back in 1970, when we went into work in the morning, we had to put our our coats, our handbags, everything in a cloakroom. You couldn't take it into the factory with you because you couldn't take food or anything like that into the factory. And you the only time you could go back to that cloakroom would have been at lunchtime or one of the breaks. It would be open then for you to go in, and you'd change into an overall, you know.
You'd change into an overall for work now.
Yes,
in the morning.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of overall you had?
I remember they were nylon overalls, green.
And were they supplied by the company?
Yes.
You didn't have to buy them?
No, and you couldn't take them home either.
Right.
They were washed by the company as well, so you might be stinking by the end of the week. I was okay, but there were some that weren't. But eventually we were allowed to take those home and wash them ourselves. You had 2 overalls after them. There was one for 1 week and one for another week. But you had to have your overall. You couldn't take food into the factory in the early days. But you know, when I came here first, the smell of the tobacco when I went in the morning, I used to hate it. Mm. It was so strong. In the end, you get so used to it, you took no notice of it at all. But there was the conditions improved even in the time I was there, you know. They were always clean in the dust, you know, because there would be a dot of dust in the factory, and you could get a mask to put on if you wanted it.
Only if you asked for it.
If you wanted it.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, nobody wanted to go around with a mask on. But, I mean, they cleaned it so much. There was people going around cleaning. They used the pipes and all that all the time. And they used to sprays come on so many times a day, Catherine. It was something to do with the atmosphere for the tobacco. It was like water sprays.
All right.
But to be a fine mist, you wouldn't really feel it.
Yeah.
But you could see it on. But for something to do with
keeping the tobacco moist.
Yeah, yeah. Because the
was it really hot in there then?
No. There were times when it would be hot, but they had air conditioning in there for us.
Oh, right.
And when I went there first, the radio would be put on so many times a day over the tannoy so that you could hear it. And, oh, I mean, we used to love that. But eventually we had headphones with radios on them that you could just have your own individual radio on. Yeah. And
so when did that change? Because did you all used to sing when
the radio would come on.
So when did that change then to kind of individual?
Well, you see, I think what happened, health and safety came in, and the noise regulation, over so many decibels you had to have headphones on.
Oh, yeah.
And what they did then was they put the radios in the headphones.
So the headphones was to protect you from the noise of the machines?
Yeah.
I see.
But it was the 80s before that came in.
Yeah.
So I suppose up until then the radio used to come on until that happened, because we'd have to have a hearing test every now and then, every so often I suppose it was once a year, I don't know, maybe it was once a year, and we'd have an eye test.
So the factory would provide those?
Yeah.
So do you think your hearing was affected at all by that?
Maybe it was, but you don't know, do you?
No. You're not aware of it? No, not at the moment.
No. And then from that, I moved into the laboratory. But that's only because things were changing and my job would have been obsolete because they were bringing in machinery that was now making the rods. You didn't need the buncher anymore. This machine made millions or thousands anyway a day. And then...
So that took away all the bunchers jobs, did it?
Yes, and it did.
They were the ones who made the filling, were they?
They were the ones that made the wrap for the filling.
Okay.
And the roller, they did the over-rolling of that wrap with the good leaf. Yeah. You could have patchy leaf on the first wrap of the filler. That was not as good as the leaf that went over the cigar itself.
Right, of course. So tell me, before we go there then, how many of you worked in the factory when you started working there?
Oh, God, there was over 1,000. But I couldn't say.
No.
But there was different rooms. There was, when you go into the factory, you first hit the filler prep, the liquoring room. The filler prep was where the filler used to be produced. It was big, huge, can't remember what they were called. Like silos, they were called.
Oh, yeah.
And the filler would be put in there, with forklift trucks, you'd be turned in there. On the left hand side you had the liquoring room where the leaf would come in all dried and to be put into liquoring machines to moisten it and make it supple again. Then you had the making room, because from the filler a prep room. That fella came into the making room to put in to make the bunches, which was the filler that went into that wrap. And from the liquoring room, the leaf came for the rollers. Then after the making room, you had, in going back in the beginning, you had what was called the borders, where they put the cigars out onto boards. So many on each board, they would then, if there was roughs belong to any one of the machines, they would throw those away and they'd go out to the machine and take a bunch of them off the girl. Wouldn't be very happy. But then from the boarding, they would be sort of pressed and they would go into the... It's a hot room, like... can't remember.
Like a drying room?
Yeah, drying room in there. They would go into the drying room and they would stay there overnight. And there would be a sample, I think, done in the morning. Because when I was on weights, four times a day I had to take a sample to the laboratory. Mm. I would also have a list of the moisture in the fillers, because the weights went by that as well. Then from the drying room, they'd be taken out and they would go to the packing room where they'd be packed. Mm. And from there, then they would go out to the dispatch stores. There'd be checks, quality checks done in the packing room. Eventually, I was doing that type of thing from the laboratory.
But so what were they testing for in the laboratory?
Moisture.
Oh, moisture.
And what they did in the laboratory, the moisture, the results from the laboratory would be going to the Inland Revenue for them to do the tax on how much tobacco was being used. Right. Something like that. At one time, it was on the tobacco coming in that it used to be charged. And then I think it was charged the tax on the tobacco going out.
Yeah, because it would the weight would be quite different,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, but I don't know when that changed, and I can't remember which it was. That's more or less in the laboratory. You weighed up a filler into small tins, and there would be cigars. You had lots of different parts of the product, even leaf and that would be brought in, and they'd be put in ovens overnight for 12 hours to dry them out. Mm. So they were weighed before they went into the ovens with the moisture in, and they were weighed when they came out without the moisture.
Yeah.
There was lots of things. And I did, from the laboratory, I also did what was called finished product audit. That I went out to the packing room and I would pick up a whole container, check the dates, the codes were correct in them, and then I would take what we called an outer, which would be a pack of a box of cigars as they would go to the shop out of that container. And I would check for the barcode that it was okay, the date was okay on the outer. And then I would go in, open a pack, take a pack of cigars out of that, and I would check that the tear tape was okay, that it wasn't the wrong brand that was put on there, because export and national ones would be different.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And at the bottom of every pack, there was a date and the machine number and the week they were made. That had all to be checked. Mm-hmm. And then I would open the cigar and I would go in to check the cigars to see if they were soft, if they were okay, if they were hard tops, if there was holes on the leaf, things like that. And that was all recorded. And
Was that later on, though?
Yes, it was.
I was going to say, when did things like barcodes come in?
Well, before I left there,
I
left in 2002, when I was 55. But I got redundancy and early retirement, so I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And I'd been there 32 years. So, this is my watch I had off them.
Oh, right.
I had this when I was there 30 years.
Oh, my God. There we are. I was going to ask you you said you were paid more money. Did you, when you were paid this money, you paid more than you were in Ireland?
Mm.
And did you have a sort of idea, sense of whether the wage was good for here as well?
Yes, it was good, seemingly. I mean, at the time, I didn't know. It's only other people told me. The cigar factory was one of the places you got the best money in Cardiff. And it was better than the money in Ireland. I said I'd pay my board and lodge, like, where I stayed.
Yeah.
And
Did you used to send any money home?
No,
that was okay,
And the other thing that they did in Freeman's was you got a bonus. Every Christmas, a good bonus.
Yes.
And every Easter, we used to get it.
All right.
So people would be on about leaving, right? But they'd be waiting for the Christmas bonus. They'd be on about leaving again. They'd go after the Easter bonus. And then we'd be taxed on it. But then something came out with the government that they stopped taxing us on that. We had it free. For a few years, and I mean, it would be a good bonus to be a few hundred, like.
Wow.
And it was always good. And another thing that they gave you was, which was great, we never would have had this at home. When I started there, I'd work 3 years and I would get an extra day off a year. When I was there 5 years, I would get 3 days off a week, a year. Extra on top of my holidays. And then when I was there, 10 was it? Eventually I was getting the equivalent of 2 weeks off a year, and you got a long service pay of about 12 days a year. The longer you were there, you got more long service. And that would be once a year you'd get that as well. I think that's as far as it went up to 12 days.
So that was nearly 5 weeks?
Yeah.
A year then?
Yeah.
Plus your bank holidays on top of that?
Yeah. At Whitson, we used to have a week. Initially, we didn't have a week off. We used to have Monday and Tuesday off, I think. Then eventually we got a week off at Whitson. But I don't know when that started. At Christmas time, we always finished sort of before Christmas Eve, and we would have, obviously our holidays were included in this somehow or other. We wouldn't go back until after New Year's Day.
Oof.
Yeah.
It started. So you'd have a week off at Christmas?
Yeah.
And when was that?
From 1970.
That was incredible.
Yeah, it was.
And did the factory shut down when you were on holiday?
Only Christmas time.
Right.
The other times, maybe Whitson had shut down as well.
Right.
But other than that, you could take your holidays when you wanted them.
Right.
Which was great. Like, you'd have to apply for them.
Yes,
at a certain time of the year. And more often than not, when you were out on the floor, you nearly always got them. When I was in the laboratory, it was a bit more, because being a smaller area, if another one wanted at the same time and you didn't have a relief, you may not be able to do it.
But you didn't have, like some factories, a lot of factories in South Wales, you had to take the miners' holiday, didn't you?
No, it wasn't like that.
No. So you could choose your holiday.
You could.
And these were obviously paid holidays.
Oh, yes.
What did you do with your holiday?
I went to Ireland. I went home for a holiday.
Right.
If I could afford it, I might go at Christmas time as well. But in the summer holidays, I used to go to Ireland. Then eventually, when I started having more holidays, I would go to Ireland, but then I would have a holiday in the sun someplace as well, as I was having more holidays. So that's what we did.
So you talked about the trade unions. So there was an union in the factory when you started,
yes.
Was it? Do you remember mm-hmm. which union it was?
Tobacco Workers Union, as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm. And you remember, mm-hmm. were you? Yeah. And do you remember any problems and strikes, disputes, that kind of thing?
Only once, for a shorter working week. The union were looking for us to finish on a Friday at 1:30 instead of 4:00, and the company were saying no. So what happened in the end was, on Friday at 1:30 we just all left. Now there were some that didn't go, but I was one of the ones that did. There wasn't many that didn't go.
Mm.
And eventually we got the 1:30. And that was about all the disputes I ever remember there, really, in the 32 years I was there.
So would you say the conditions then? What were the conditions like? Because this was the new factory, wasn't it?
Yes.
Because there was another
Freeman's.
And this was the one down Penarth.
Yes.
So what were the conditions like there?
The conditions were good.
Yeah.
They were. The only thing it was that bit of dusty.
Mm. Dusty and noisy.
Yes. But you get used to all that. I couldn't say they were a bad firm to work. I used to moan sometimes. I'd be fed up. Because if you went on the sick and you were on the sick for more than 2 weeks, they'd be sending for you to come down laterally. In the later years, they'd be sending you to come down to see the factory doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And me, who used to suffer with depression occasionally. That was the worst thing they could do to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was... Now the conditions were good there. I can't say anything. Maybe it depends on the job you had, whether you'd say it was good or bad. I don't know, but no, I think they were a good company to work for.
Did you become a shop steward or anything like that?
No.
No.
I never had any ambitions like that.
No.
I was quite happy to do my work, get on with it myself. And quite life.
Yeah. Did you become a supervisor?
No.
Or a trainer or anything like that?
I trained people, but I didn't become a trainer. I trained people in my job that I was doing. Now, you would get more money if you trained people. And while you were doing it, you would get the money for it.
Oh, you would?
Yes, you would. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would. If you were training somebody, you did get the money for it.
So you think it was a very fair firm then?
Yes. I mean, but the only thing I remember with one girl was, she used, Diane Bennett was her name, but don't put that on there. She was doing the training for, a relief training instructor she was, for years, on and off she used to do it. And next thing, the job was going for a permanent training instructor. They gave it to someone else, even though she applied for it. They wanted to train this girl. I said, no, I'm going back on my machine if I'm not good enough to give it to me.
Mm.
So I don't know what happened there.
Mm.
That for some reason, obviously, she was okay to do it, but she wasn't okay to give it to her permanently. I mean, I wouldn't have been happy about that either.
Mm.
But as well as that, the company... At one stage, you would get promotion if you want a promotion, and you'd been there, you had the longest service, you would get it. But that changed in the latter years. But now that was the union saying that people who had service should be able to do, get the jobs, you know.
Mm.
How
did it change then, and why do you think it changed?
Because it didn't need so many people.
Oh, yeah.
And the unions didn't have the strength anymore that they used to have. We had redundancies. I think the first redundancy, that I can't tell you when it was, but it was when the machines came in that started making the bunches.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of the girls making the bunches. But I don't know what year that was. But it was voluntary redundancies. And people with longer service, if they applied for it, they got it.
Yeah.
And then it would be after that, if enough people didn't want it, to be last in, first out. But they gave very good redundancy package.
At the beginning?
No, all the time.
All the time?
All the time. It would be, it was something like so many weeks for every 5 years you were there.
Right.
And it was good.
Yeah.
I think 7.5 weeks was the most money you could get for every year you've been there, but of course the taxman didn't hit you, you know. And if you didn't have enough time left to work, they couldn't give you any more redundancy than you'd have if you worked. We had a few redundancies there, different times, but it was always people that had the service. They didn't have to make anyone redundant that didn't want it, compulsory.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if I think that's that.
Do you think it was a workers' market when you first went there?
Oh, yes. People used to come, they'd be working there, they'd go off and work in Butlins for the summer and come back again. You know, I mean, at the end, oh, no way could you do that.
No.
It was. People used to go away and come back, go and come. They
yes.
always got the job back.
And did that keep standards up, do you think, you know, for the workers? Or do you think they were a good company to the end?
I think they were a good company to the end. I mean, I wasn't that there the last few years when Japan Tobacco took it over, because it was taken over by JTI, I think it was called. Japan Tobacco International, I think that's what it was called. It's there on the smoke signal. But I mean, I still get my smoke signals every quarter, which is news about what's going on in the company. That's that top one there, I'd say.
Oh, that's called so you get a smoke, the smoke signal is the company magazine,
yeah.
And you still get it?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I retired from there. I was over 50. Anyone who's getting a pension from there would get one of those.
Right. Ones.
Now, I had to ring Wayward Bridge in the beginning and say, why haven't I got my smoke signal? But since then. And we used to also have, when I went there first, you could have so many cigars a month free, or cigarettes, whichever you wanted. I remember I used to get 30 sovereign, because they were small cigarettes. And at the end, when I was working there, I don't know how many years we were getting them for, I was getting 200 Spencer and Hedges a month.
Right.
And what I used to do then, because I wasn't smoking, I did smoke for a short while, and I gave them up. So I had two. Then, because of this tobacco business with the government and that, anyone who started in Freeman's after a certain date never got those cigarettes. Now, I expect if we didn't have a union, it would have stopped for all of us.
Oh, yes.
But, you see, the unions look after things like that. You needed a union, really.
So did you get those Benson and Hedges up to the day you retired?
Yes. And if it had been before the time that the different law changed, I would be still getting those Benson and Hedges.
Right.
But because the law changed, they gave them to you until you retired.
Uh-huh.
So I used to, one of the girls would buy them off me.
Right. So
that you, smoked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't smoke, so you used to sell them.
Yeah. So I was getting my benefit out of them anyway, wasn't there?
Yeah.
One of the girls that worked me would buy them off me. And it was cheaper for her because we were giving them to her whatever price she wanted them at. She would have a number of 200 packs of 200 off different girls. But the pensioners that were already getting their cigarettes, they were offered, they would buy out your contract, give you so many 100 for this, and you get them more, or you could still have continued.
Mm.
Some of them had the money, others continued having them until they die, really.
Mm.
And the other thing they used to do, we had sports and social clubs there, and the sports and social club used to have a pensioner's do every year. They take them out for, but it was the company was involved in it as well. And Margaret, who's my friend who worked down there, that is, she's 85 now. Margaret gets, I think it's £20 every Christmas that I don't get, because she was getting it before the company changed. And she still gets that. I go, I had £20 off the company. Well, I said, I didn't. But they used to have a hamper initially. And they stopped the hampers and they were giving them £10 at Christmas. But now, well, I don't know when it changed to £20. But I don't get that because I was not there when they used to give these hampers. Yes. I was there, but I wasn't a pensioner.
No.
So I think they are fair. You know, I think they were a very fair company to work for and a good company to work for.
You're talking about the social and sports thing. Did when you were... Not as a pensioner now, but when you work there, what about dues and trips and that kind of thing? Can you remember anything like that?
Yes. I didn't go on the trips. But they used to have... The pensioners would have... a pensioner's day out every year. Until one of the pensioners got lost to be taken to Bath, they could be taken, you know... But it was once a year and there'd be a meal included and all that. But one year, one of the pensioners who had a bit of Alzheimer's got lost.
Oh.
Because they'd be left to do their own thing in these places, you see.
Yeah.
And after that, Victor was his name. They couldn't find Victor in Bath. And eventually they found out Victor had a bit of dementia.
Mm.
And he had found his way home himself.
Oh, right.
But they were still in Bath looking for him.
Oh, right.
So that was the end of the days out for the pensioners.
Yeah.
But they did have a pensioners party.
Yeah.
But they also, years ago, they used to have trips. I remember I didn't go to the QE2 when it was first launched.
For workers now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, workers used to go. There'd be a day out. You'd have to pay something, like it wouldn't be free. And it probably would be a weekend day.
Because yeah, it wasn't a
working
day.
No. And the company also, it sends you on courses. I went on a computer course when we were changing the system. I hated going in the mind, but I did go. There was training for us in every aspect of work there. So
did you feel that you were very well looked after then?
Yes, we were well looked after.
Yeah. And what about Christmas parties and stuff like that? Was there anything like that?
We always had a Christmas meal in work.
Yeah.
It would be a special meal for us. I can't remember now at the beginning when I went there, because I'd say sometimes I took my holidays, keep some of my holiday days to take them to go home at Christmas time. But we always had a Christmas draw, and there'd be bottles or brandy, whiskey, all the rest, at Christmas time, and your number would go in and there'd be so many prizes. In the early days you didn't pay anything, but in the latter years you had to pay something towards it. Like you buy a ticket, and the week before Christmas there'd be a big draw then, and who'd win won. They always had something, and there were good prizes, you know. And we always had a Christmas dinner in work in the latter years anyway. Right. I can't remember when that started up, if it was always there. And the management used to serve us. They'd be all dressed up, their waitress and uniforms and that, and they would serve us on that day. And it was always a lovely Christmas dinner. We paid so much for it, mind. But it wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
But to be a proper Christmas dinner with your turkey and your ham and all the rest.
Yes.
All cooked in the canteen, in the works canteen. And there was day outs. I can't tell you much about them because I didn't go on them.
Oh, no.
But they used to have competitions. They had, it's a knockout competition. They would have golf tournaments with men in work that would be in golf, playing golf. They would be badminton, I think it was, they used to play. But now I didn't get involved in those because I was married and I didn't have time.
Yes.
You know, when I was finished work, I was finished work. And that was it, like.
Yes. What about going out with, did you make special friends at work and did you go out with those friends?
Oh yeah, I still keep in contact with some of my friends now. You definitely had friends. I mean, Tryphena was one of the friends that I had. I was one of the bridesmaids at her wedding. And I still got friends. I mean, I've got a lot younger friends than me who still keep in touch with me. I've got older friends. It was like a family place, you know, when you were working there. We had good fun. They were a good company to work for. Yes. They? You know, we had good fun there.
Although you were married, did you still go out with the girls sometimes?
Yes.
So there was a good sort of female camaraderie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still meet the girls now, and other girls go out a lot more often than what I do. But, and they still meet up now that the company is no longer here.
Yes.
Some of them still meet. Oh, yeah, there was good camaraderie between us. I mean, there'd be the ones you didn't like, and the ones that didn't like you, where you get that all. That's normal, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
So, would you say it was one of the reasons you stayed in Wales then?
Oh yes, it was. And I always planned, from the time we had the first redundancy, that 55, 54, 56 was best time to take redundancy if you could. And I always planned after the first lot that if the time was right when they come, that's what I will do. And thank God I was lucky enough for it to happen. Because at that stage, I had enough, really. Because things were all changing. People were changing. And because, how can I put it? Jobs weren't so easy to get anymore. People were always frightened, started being frightened about their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And you'd see something's going on, you think, oh God, I'd prefer to be out of this now. And I mean, I finished there in 2002. I mean, I used to meet some of the girls and we'd speak on the phone and say, oh Maggie, you're lucky you're out of there now. You'd never believe how it's going or what's got out the door. You know, things had changed so much. But I don't know.
So looking back now then, how do you feel about the time you worked in, you know, in the
I'm
factory?
So glad I worked there. I'm so glad I worked there. So we're a good company, we got good conditions, good money. I enjoyed it. But when it was time for me to go, I was ready to go. I haven't missed it. I haven't missed it at all. I'm enjoying my retirement. We used to have people over from Ireland that I still keep in touch with, that part of Northern Ireland, who would be the other side of the divide from me, really, but we all great friends, that I never, ever felt anything like that within the company, you know, which was great. So I don't know if I can tell you any more now.
Thank you very much.
Have you got anything else to ask me?